All right, it's 4 o'clock. We'd like to get started with the Board of Directors meeting for the Montgomery County Hospital District. We'll start out with the invocation. Everybody stand.
Lord, we thank you for bringing us here this afternoon. We pray your presence upon this meeting. We pray for each one of us in attendance. In Jesus' name, amen.
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 Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Ready? Roll call.
Robert Hudson.
Here.
Charles Shirley.
Here.
Kelly Inman.
Not here.
Tanya Peacock. Here. Jackie Williams. Here. Jason Walker.
Here.
Bob Bagley.
Here.
All righty. Public comment? No one?
Yes.
Okay. And special recognition?
Yes, sir.
Hi. Good afternoon. We have two. Both award winners, both field and non-field, were unable to be here, but we're going to read the nomination for the record so that we have it, and we'll get them their plaques when we see them next. So for non-field, Kevin Lee, who's our fleet foreman, nominated Matt Carmichael for Employee of the Month for non-field. And it says, I nominate Matthew Carmichael in the fleet department for going above and beyond when UTV-1 began experiencing battery issues during the Ironman Texas event on April 19th, 2026. Matt was on call this particular weekend and took the call with the crew who stated that their UTV was having starting issues and they thought that the battery had gone bad. Matt was able to source a battery from a local O'Reilly's parts store, purchase it with his own money, and replace it quickly at Station 25 in an effort to get UTV-1 back in service to complete its mission. Not only did Matt do this, he also provided 10 gallons of standby fuel in the event that the crew would need it before they got to the end of the event and didn't have to worry about finding fuel later in the evening. These actions exemplify the kind of person Matthew is. He is always one to greet everyone with a smile, treats them with respect, and is dependable. Matt is a valuable asset to the fleet department and MCHD as a whole. So congratulations to Mr. Carmichael. And we did reimburse him for the battery that he purchased.
And the gas.
That was a good ad for O'Reilly Auto Parts.
So. Yeah, it's a good ad. and then for Field Employee of the Month, I'm going to invite up Chief Tobin to read the nomination. Also, this gives me the opportunity to introduce, this is Nick Tobin. He's been with MCHD. He's the new division chief of the clinical department. This is his third week, so we'll take it easy on him. He'll just read Employee of the Month to start. So take it away, sir.
Thank you. Hey, everyone. I nominated Rainey Morris for Employee of the Month. Kind of a two-part thing here. The second part was submitted by a student in regards to her time with Rainey Morris. Rainey did a phenomenal job displaying excellence in her time with this student. Both her dedication and kindness with this student had made a clear and meaningful impact, and she really represented MCHD in this matter. The student had written to us in a feedback that she had delivered, Medic Morris was an amazing medic. I was impressed with the structure of MCHD and how close the station was to each other. I was previously not considering working for MCHD due to it being so far away from Katy, but after working a shift with Ms. Morris and seeing how MCHD operates, I feel like it's going to give me a great structure to become the best medic, and now MCHD is at the top of my list for where I want to start working after graduation.
Good.
So, thank you all.
Next, executive report.
All righty.
Okay, you have my information before you. Most of it is just discussing things that we did. We had a busy month last month, but I'm going to go over a couple of things that we're working on that are very important for the future. Number one, I want to say welcome again to Ms. Tanya Peacock. I think you're going to be a great addition to our board. Thank you for volunteering. it's a highly paid position. Secondly, I wanted to note that this last month, Donna Daniel, Chief Campbell, and I had a meeting with Mr. Art Aguilar to discuss best practices to coordinate our work back and forth, and I think we've got that worked out well. The executive staff and I met with Mr. Grice for lunch, and we awarded him his years of service plaque. Then as we did several other things during the month, but I want to note that the executive team and the fleet foreman met with Enterprise Fleet Management to review the replacement vehicle plan for fiscal year 2027. I think that Kevin has done an excellent job of coordinating our work with Enterprise Fleet, and they had a new representative, so that was a very important meeting. We also had clinical continuing education last week, and I think it was very well done. Big focus for us for this next 90 days is to complete the 2027 fiscal budget for review and approval by the board the first part of September. Focus on our EMS staffing and deployment program for 2027. That's going to be a big deal. Complete the transition from our legacy financial software to our new financial software and our procurement software. That's turned out to be a bigger challenge than we were expecting, but we're working our way through it. We want to simplify and streamline the procurement and the accounts payable process, and we want to be overly prepared for anything that may happen to people in the county during the FIFA event that will be here during the months of June and the beginning month of July. We could have a lot, we could have not much, but we're preparing for a lot just in case. Any questions?
I have a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Says that you guys met with a local real estate developers.
We did.
Who exactly did you meet with?
What's his name?
Miller?
Yeah, okay. we met with a gentleman, Mr. Miller, and he presented a project to us because he talked to us earlier, and he said, hey, I'd like to do this. And we said, well, okay, you know, give us a proposal. And he said, well, where do you need it? I said, we need something down in South County. So he came back and said, I found some property in South County. I think that I can build a station for you, lease it to you, and then you can buy it back at some time in the future. And he talked to us about it, and we said, well, that's really great, except we need to make sure that this can be a legal local government acquisition. So you need to go talk to a local government attorney and make sure that you're doing things by the book before we could even talk about numbers or process or anything else with the board. So he's going back to do his homework. I just wanted to put that on the table because there's a chance that he'll be coming back, and when he does, then if it makes some sense, we'll obviously move it to the board and see what you guys think.
Didn't we do this before?
Yeah, he did present this 3 or 4 months ago.
No, I'm talking years ago. Didn't we not have a contractor build for us?
We did through the bank, right. Through Wood Forest Bank. We did it that route. That was station 40 and 43.
Right, that's what I thought. And it turned out good for us, as I recall, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the county is looking at possibly doing the new courthouse facility with something like this, the same thing. So they've already researched all of this. I don't know if we can piggyback onto to what they've done, but they've already looked into it. Now they don't have an architect assigned yet, but they already have the property and the preliminary plans. But that was, instead of doing a bond, the county's talking about the possibility of having a contractor do it, build it, and then lease purchase it back from them, because when you do a bond, which we've never done, thankfully, there's no accountability on where the money goes for bonds. So I like this idea. If it comes out good for us, because it has in the past. But again, it depends upon the location, if that's going to fit into our...
the location is a good fit.
Yeah.
Okay. My another question... The individual that you've been talking to, is he the individual that did the previous projects that Bob brought up?
No, he is not. We would not be utilizing them again for those services.
No, the individual who did those projects, he's no longer in the business. And his son took over, and we did a project there. It didn't work out so well.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Chief Campbell?
Yes. We're very appreciative, thankful. May is a big month for us. We have CE. It's National EMS Week, so we're appreciative for the community, the hospitals, our partners showing us and our crews a little bit of love last week, which was good. It turned out to be very busy, so we got to spend a lot of time together with the fire departments and the hospitals. But the support we get from the community on social media and really across the county is great. So now CE's over. May's wrapping up. We kind of focus really on FIFA. Mr. Johnson mentioned it. I'll dive a little bit deeper. We don't know what to expect with FIFA. It's really hard to compare how it could impact our system in the United States because each country does EMS a little bit differently. So there's not really any good data on how or what to expect, especially since it's spread really throughout the United States. So there's a few things we're going to try to do. We're going to try to keep our EMS system intact right now. The Houston region is focused on protecting the Med Center, meaning they don't want the roads to get blocked with people celebrating soccer matches where we can't get to the hospital. They want to make sure that the hospital routes are clear, and we're going to try to make sure that we try to keep as many assets in the county as we can instead of going out of the county as often as we do. And we want to make sure that we're working with the Woodlands and some of the areas that are having some of the large watch parties to make sure that we're aligned with how we want to staff those events and what we're going to do. We did have a meeting this morning with OEM, the hospitals, the fire departments, and us, and we just kind of went through some of our initial plans. Right now, everybody's wait and see. Everybody has surge plans. We're planning for if we get an influx of population and patients, but at this point, it'll be 60 days of wait and see. Outside of that, it's hiring season for us, so Alarm is hiring. We're hiring in the field, all with the opportunity to have a NEOP and later in the summer so that we can plan for late summer, early fall. Oh, I thought Mrs. Miller was picking up her mic. I think that's it, unless you have any questions.
I just have one. You have gone here that Alarm was finalizing their shift bid for the last 6 months for 2026. We only do once a year for the field, right? Or
yes, sir.
But we do it twice a year for the Alarm? For
yes,
alarm?
Sir. Yes, sir.
Is that because of turnover or what?
In the field, if this is before my time, but in the field, we used to do 6 month bids and then we moved to a year because it's a lot of shuffle. Moving, 150, now 325 people every 6 months, there would be a mutiny outside of this building. Alarm does 6 months bids. It's a smaller group of people. They have a change in turnover and seniority, so you don't want to, potentially be on nights for the whole year. So they're able to split it up in 6 month increments, and it provides a little bit of change for them and they're in a positive way as far as I know, unless Chief Gonzalez has anything to add outside of that.
Yes, Mr. Bagley, we do have a lot of promotions and stuff, so we did try to do a year bid probably, about 3 or 4 years ago? 3 or 4 years ago, and then we had to redo it because there was so much promotions and everything else, and to keep the shifts where we need this many dispatchers, this many call takers and stuff like that, it was just a big mess, and we had holes. So we feel like the 6 months is better. Also, you're in a very small room with a lot of people, so if you do have some personality conflicts or something like that, a year is a very long time. It can be a toxic environment.
That would never happen.
So we think it's better to do it in the 6 months, especially with people promoting and stuff like that.
Okay.
So Kelly's got lots of experience. Kelly has lots of experience in scheduling. She did it at the college for years and years and years. And she does a very good job, a very capable job. And so it's roughly 28 to 30 people. That's a lot easier to shift bid for in one location than 400 people in 30 locations.
So those are new mics, aren't they?
Yes, I don't know how to operate this one.
Good.
We're learning too. We're having NEOP.
You still need to hold it closer to your mouth so we can hear you, though.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. You have my report before you. I'll go over a couple of highlights, and then I'm going to ask Ashley Peachy, our materials management manager, and Nivia Wheat, our community paramedicine manager, to come up so you get a vision of who they are and they can talk briefly about their departments. Facilities is moving along. We'll talk about Station 13 and the results of the inspections in the executive session today. We completed the purchase of Station 15 expansion. We've had two companies come out to look at what it would be like to move the home. The recommendation is not to have the add-on apartment, add-on where the garage is space moved with it, because it's built on a different foundation. And so the other part of the house, which contains the kitchen, living room, two bedrooms, and bath, the core part of the main house, would be good to be moved. So we'll be placing that. It's on the salvage and surplus list. Once that's approved, we will post in the paper for the sealed bid and go through that process. Both companies that we talked to also do buy homes that are moved and sell them from their lot, so they may be interested or have people interested that they will forward the sealed bid to as well, to get some action on the house, hopefully. Station 48 is moving along. They've been putting the metal siding up, and so it looks a lot different. It looks a lot better now as it's moving along. Facilities has finished a number of their projects, full-serve preventative maintenance on all the station and administrative generators. The cleaning, if y'all didn't see the roof next door, it was black and yucky. Now it's blinding in my office because the sun hits it and it glares off of it. They've cleaned that up, done the ceiling, and there's some additional areas they're going to have to weatherproof because during the process it did leak a little bit into our materials management warehouse. So they've identified that spot and we'll seal that up to prevent any damage. 31 bay doors and HVAC have been replaced. 20's HVAC has been replaced. This week is being replaced. And the 32 generator and ATS is online. Did somebody say something? Okay. Radio and towers. Chad got the opportunity to teach the EPI and preparedness division team how to work their new radios that were grant purchased. This is noticed in many drills that they've done that the communications were not good. The radios were old and outdated, so they've got new radios, and this will set them up very well for pod sites or any public health emergency activation. We're still looking at properties in the Porter area as the phase one of the Porter Tower build. It's been narrowed down to a couple of sites that we're doing our due diligence on to see which one a tower will work on best. Are you going to speak?
Yeah, is 30 a good place to put a tower?
No. Is Justin in here? No. It's not.
Pardon me?
There's two pieces of school property as well as one at a Porter Fire Station that are viable properties for that placement.
And they've been tested and they would be a good place to send out signals.
Yes, for coverage. For IT, the CAD team and that alarm division chief attended the International Public Safety Consortium in Fort Worth. This is where they're able to network with different people and different vendors that provide computer-aided dispatch. They get to discuss the technology and our operational challenges with the actual manufacturer. And it seems no matter which CAD you have, who the person that owns it is, everybody has the same issues, whether it's Motorola, Central Square, any of those. It's the same issues across the board. Now we'll ask Ashley Peachy to come up, and she will talk to us about materials management.
Good afternoon. My department consists of 8 other people. We have 2 distribution techs. We have a materials coordinator. We also have a warehouse tech.
It doesn't sound like it.
Okay. It's a green.
It's green, but. Now it's off.
Okay, so it's better?
Yeah.
Okay. So our department consists of 8 employees. There's 2 distribution techs that deliver supplies around the county. I have a materials coordinator who is kind of fill-in for the rest of the department whenever they are out. They can do the receiving. They can work distribution jobs. We have 2 make-ready techs that prepare our ambulances, a make-ready 2 tech that kind of oversees the workflow. And then we have our equipment specialist, which is Angela Matthews. She replaced Diane, who retired after 23 years. And then we have our warehouse tech that receives all of our product in. For all of MCHD. Just kind of an update, our nitrile gloves are on strict nationwide allocation, capping orders at a historical usage. This does not allow us to increase our orders in preparation for hurricane season or the FIFA Cup. Therefore, we have sourced an alternative glove that's comparable to our current glove, and this will be able to allow us to provide our first responders gloves and not tap into our allocation so we can make sure everybody's fully stocked during this time. Materials management will also be updating all the stations and the ambulances, complying with the changes presented at CE to the field staff. In those changes, we'll be removing head immobilizers, the DL handles and blades, which are the direct laryngoscope blades and handles, KEDs, traction splints, Cook's kits, which are the pneumothorax kits. They will be replacing the Cook's kits with ARS needles or decompression needles. Kit changes on the trucks. They'll be adding soft colors to both the C-collar bags on the trucks, and then the PD bags will be adding a child mask harness and a PEEP valve. So there's lots of changes, but we can make it work. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we'll have Nivea Wheat, the community paramedicine manager, come up. She's going to talk about their processes and give y'all an overview of a case study shared with HCAP.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. So we're kind of the problem solvers of MCHD when it comes to the patients and connecting them with resources. Our goal is not to do what we want to do. It's to do what the patient wants our needs, because what I could come into your home and say, hey, this may work, it may not work for them. So our goal is just to work with the patient to kind of improve their quality of life, reduce those 911 emergent calls that they may, or non-emergent calls that they may not need to be using 911 for, and could use other resources in the community for. So just to go over our process and what we do and to show the workload that goes into a single patient, when we get our referrals, they used to come from EMS. Now they come from anybody who comes in contact with a patient. So that can be law enforcement, Tri-County, Lone Star Clinic, the homeless shelters, the women's center, other case managers with like home health organizations and things like that, and sometimes just community members. We also get a lot of referrals from HCAP, where patients need help getting documentation and whatnot, or patients who don't qualify for HCAP, and we help them go through other resources. So once we get those referrals, we review them, which means going into our 911 system, looking at image trend reports, looking for patterns, seeing why they call, when they call. During that time, we identify the resources we think they might need based on those EMS reports or what the referrals say when they come in. We look for safety concerns as well, because sometimes we'll talk to patients on the phone instead of going out to their home and seeing because of safety concerns. So it just depends on what we find as we're reviewing things on how we approach a patient. We then make the decision to either enroll them or not, and then we call. So our first attempt is to call the patient. If we get them on the phone, we tell them what our program is, we describe what we can help with, ask what they need help with, and get our determinants that they, you know, from the patient that they need help with, and then we'll schedule a time to go meet that patient. Or we try to, there's a lot we can do on the phone now. After COVID, a lot of things became online, so it gives us a little more freedom to not have to go sit in someone's home. We can do a lot over the phone. So we've helped people do logins. We've helped them get do the HCAP application, do Lone Star applications, Texas Benefits applications, sign up for an email address so that they can have access to all of those community resources and be able to apply for them. We've set and done Social Security applications for folks just because it's lengthy. It's not hard to understand some of it. It's just timely, and sometimes they're not tech savvy. We've sat at the Social Security office with patients to help hold hands and guide them through those processes as well. Again, a lot of research. A lot of the documents that you need for like HCAP are also needed for Lone Star Clinic and their sliding scale. And there's some other programs throughout the community that need the same stuff. So we end up kind of clustering that and turning everything in at once. So the patient gets all of those resources and nothing falls through the crack. Or they don't have to, you know, get bank statements for here and then 3 months later get bank statements for somewhere else. So there's just a substantial amount of workload that goes into a single client that sometimes gets overlooked or people don't understand. And just to kind of bring all that full circle, real-life patient we had last year, it was a 50-year-old male, relocated from Florida to Texas with his family, had a stroke, bedbound. We actually got the referral from HCAP because he didn't qualify for their services. So we've looked at transportation, food, and medical coverage. When we went out, turns out it wasn't just a family of one, it was a family of five. They moved into a trailer home that had like builder grade, I don't even know, it's like construction steps. So the grandmother that was at the house was also dialysis and dementia, and we were making her more often than we were making our patient that got referred. So there, in the home, there was a hospital bed that he was in and a wheelchair that she was in, and then would sleep on the floor. So we brought them food that day. They had no income except for hers. We brought them food that day, got them connected with Adult Protective Services to manage some exploitation stuff that was going on with grandmother, unrelated to family. Got them a ramp built, which is on the house now, not only just a ramp, but ramp and stairs and railing so nobody fell off. Our crews that benefited, because before we were having a stair chair and having to have fire department and EMS lift grandma down 3 times a week to either go to the hospital or dialysis. So it was unsafe for everybody involved. We got the original patient ended up, got on Social Security disability, which he had applied for before. It was just turning information in and getting him hooked up with someone to help manage that process. We got the two adult children that were in the home set up with resources to help them find jobs because they were new to an area and they had no transportation. And then got them set up, the other two medically fragile people set up with Brazos Transit and Meals on Wheels for transportation. So we still work with them actively, just not as frequently as we did initially because we got them all set up with stuff that they needed. So right now they're maintaining. Any questions?
Thank you. Thank you. Very good.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, public health. You have the report there. It's lengthy, so I'll answer any questions, but I did want to highlight that in the clinic, y'all had asked for numbers. So there were 43 patients that received immunizations in the month of April, zero veterans. We have to report individually on veterans. There were no male or female veterans. You have to report them separately. Our STD program screened and or treated 47 patients. Well, they screened 47 and 16 were treated. Of those, a lot of those referrals, they come to us for medications. They're already tested and come with positive test results, and they come to us for treatment. And the clinic does report to the EPI team upstairs, but they only report the positive tests done in the clinic to the EPI team, and there were 4 of those that went upstairs to be included in the numbers on the EPI division. Our TB program, our current caseload for active TB is 22 patients. Latent TB is 24. The EPI division I included just for getting ready for budget and educational purposes, the grants that are open to them and what they're allowed to do under each grant. So you'll see those and that information there. The one of concern is the public health infrastructure grant. This was a 5-year block grant that came out in COVID to help recruit and hire new personnel in public health and maintain that staffing. And that money runs out next year. So we have 3.5 employees, 3 that are working, 1 that's a part-time split with the clinic, that the position is vacant, but those funds will be ending next year with no word of extension, additional funds, or a replacement grant for that. So the essential staff that are on that will roll into the county funding or into the $1.9 million until such a time that an additional grant or funding source can be found for that. Which is, now that I say that out loud, that can't happen because then that would be supplanting a grant. So once we start paying for them, we have to pay for them forever. So those are those. Megna's provided a bunch of information in here for you guys. They do continue working with the World Cup preparations, with DR Congo being housed here in Houston for the games. There's a lot of attention being paid to the Ebola outbreak there and monitoring them before they come, after they come. Houston is now an airport for taking in patients that have been in those countries, not patients, people that have been in those countries for observation. I'll answer any questions, or Megna can, if she, if you have any more questions. She did clarify in her report that of the 65 STDs reported to epidemiology, 4 were from the clinic. So that was separated out.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you. HK.
Ready to go? Can I have that? Is this on? No. I think my voice. It was really close, like that?
There you go.
Thank you. All right. You have the HCAP report. I'll just briefly highlight some HCAP data for April. We received 192 applications, and 42 of those were from local hospitals, specifically HCA Conroe and HCA Kingwood, which is great. It means our collaboration with them is being effective. And also, we received 91 applications through our LaserFish online portal. That's great. Again, that shows that our community knows how to reach us and they know how to get HCAP information. Our outreach team, our eligibility team, they keep doing outreach. Particularly in April, they went through Conroe and were able to help 21 individuals with the HCAP application, and 10 of those people were approved for benefits. Also, our case managers were able to help 2 individuals with the MD Anderson application. So that's great because we want to make sure there's no lapsing coverage and they can get their oncology needs taken care of. And our pharmacy team, they do a good job triaging the needs of our clients, medication needs of our clients, and they were able to help 9 individuals by putting in 15 PAP applications. So those individuals got their prescriptions at no cost. So that's all I have to report. I'll be happy to take any questions or comments.
I have one question.
Yes.
On your report, it talks about a reason for application denials and inmate released. Can you explain that a little bit more?
So some counties, it's automatic that if there's an inmate, of course, in jail, they get on the program. Ours, there's an application process. So they have to fill out an application to get on our program. And so it's just for that period of time when they're in jail. When they get out, they have to reapply for HCAP. So inmates, we have 3 programs in HCAP. We have the medical assistance plan, the medical county indigent care plan, and then the jail plan. So we have 3 different populations. And so when you see jail inmate, they come off the program, I think that one was zero. I'm not sure if there was a number attached to that. But if we see that they're denied, it's either, yeah. Is that number 0? Let me look at that because I think, hold on, let me see.
It looked to me.
Because they should not, the denial like will not 25. Be. And it could be because, again, if they don't have a medical need, why are they applying? There are different reasons why an inmate will not automatically get on the program. It has to be for something we cover. And so if it's not something we cover again, we're not going to put them on the program. So it's not just automatic like other counties where they just put their inmates on the program. Does that, sorry, I'm trying to look for the, but I think that's.
It's like 27.
Oh, 27. Sorry, I'm looking for the place. So denied. Yes. Okay. Yeah, that will be it. If a jail inmate is denied, denials are based on, it's not something we covered. It's not a covered service. And so we're not just going to put them on the program just because we have a contract with the jail. But again, it's not automatic. There are rules and there are policies and guidelines. And so we have to make sure that everyone applying falls within those rules and policies and those guidelines. Thank Sorry you. About that. I was trying to find the page.
I have one for you.
Yes, sir.
I noticed HCA seems to be the one giving most of the referrals. Is there a reason the other hospitals aren't doing it?
So
how much are the others?
Right. And so we try to focus on those hospitals that are in our network, and that's where we collaborate the most. HCA Conroe, the HCA hospitals, Conroe, Kingwood, and Tomball are within network because, again, they're lower cost providers, but they provide quality care. And so we send our clients there so we can extend their dollars. And we also have a contract with St. Luke. So we try to stick within those that are in network. We have worked with others in the county. We try to work with Methodist and Memorial. We've tried, they know about our program, and their application specialists on site are in contact with us, and they know about the program. But again, unfortunately, we just don't get a lot of traction from those hospitals. It's not lack of us reaching out or them, or you know, them not knowing about the program. It's just, unfortunately, that partnership has not panned out the way the others have. And maybe because most of our clients use those hospitals, again, the HCA hospitals, St. Luke's, because we have a great contract with St. Luke's at Medicaid rate. So that could be another reason why we're getting more traction from those hospitals and not so much from the others.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it. Mr. Allen?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So for accounting, continue to work on the budget. So this month, aggregating the submission so far. In June, we'll be reviewing, meeting, further refining the budget in preparation for the public meetings with you guys in July. Oracle implementation, continuing to work through the software conversion, whether they be process or actual software issues. And then the ambulance supplemental payment program, the cost report was submitted May 6th. Originally that was due March 31st, but the state wasn't ready for the submissions. They implemented a new portal for those submissions, and they just had problems with it. And so they gave a reprieve until that was ready. So we submitted May 6th. The preliminary estimate is $1,035,293. It's not a final number. It's going to go under audit. In fact, we're already going through desk review and answering their questions. In billing, again, working through the software conversion, which is largely complete, and I'm very proud of it thus far, but do continue to analyze the workflow and make adjustments. That will be an ongoing, never-ending process. Collections for April were $2,338,000 compared to last April, $2,285,000, a difference of about $53,000. And then days in accounts receivable were 62. Procurement, again, this is tied to Oracle and our internal processes. So as Randy said, we're working very hard to work through those processes, better define them, refine them, et cetera. Be happy to try to answer any questions you might have about anything there.
So the budget workshops, we have them set up for the 21st, 22nd?
Yes, sir. I think we're going to cover those in the next agenda item.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No problem. All right. Well, thank you. Any questions? All righty. All right. Next item.
Yes, sir. So to answer your question, in July, yes, the public meetings with the Board of Directors are scheduled for the 21st and 22nd. That'll be followed by a regular board meeting on July. We try to kind of all these budget meetings, all the tax meetings, we try to keep them in line with Tuesday so you kind of have a regular day to do that. Because as we kind of get later into August, your Tuesday dance card is going to be pretty full with budget. On August 11th, Tammy McRae will be here, and she'll be discussing tax rates, what the tax valuation is. She'll define what the new revenue rate is, what the voter approval rate is, and then answer any questions around that for you guys. At that meeting, also, we'll have kind of a rough budget available so you can kind of see what the expenses are, because at that meeting, we'll make an initial preliminary recommendation for a tax rate. Won't be final, but that'll be what we use going forward as we further discuss. It can be lowered, it just can't be raised. The end of that week, we'll get a budget book to you guys in preparation for the budget committee meeting on the following Tuesday. And so at that meeting, we'll present the entire budget to you guys, go through key points in the budget, and then at the end of that presentation, open that up for discussion, questions, and really kind of the workshop aspect of whatever's left in hammering out the budget. The next week, we'll have the public tax hearing and then a regular meeting. Towards the end of that week, we'll get out a second version of the budget so that it will be available to you September 1st as we look at adopting the budget and adopting the tax rate. And that will pretty much carry us through. The deadline to adopt the tax rate is Friday the 18th of September. So we plan to have plenty of time in case anything goes awry that we can take another run at it. But we expect to finish on September 1st, that first Tuesday.
I guess make a motion here. Consider an act on
yes,
the tentative schedule for the tax rate and the budget hearings as outlined in the calendars in the budget book. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any other questions? Any comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. All righty. Number nine, Mr. Walker.
I'd like to consider, act on purchase of budgeted Striker Power Load and Power Pro 2 COTS.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. Number 10, Kelly. So I'll consider an act on the health care assistant program claims from non-medical 1115 waiver providers. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any comments? Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. Consider an act on the ratification of voluntary contributions for uncompensated care to the Medicare 1115 waiver program of the health care assistance program claims. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right, Jason seconds. Any questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. CFO report.
Well, yes, sir. So the board does have the report before you. And looking at cash investments for the end of April, they were at $71,672,000 compared to a year ago, $71,235,000. So pretty close, only about a 0.6% difference. In terms of the income statement, this is through the first 7 months of the year through April. And so for April, you'll see that revenue over expenses were actually greater than expenses, so negative $3,679,000. And so this is to be expected just based on the cycle of the year. Primarily, most of the tax revenue has been received. We've had those collections. And so if you look for the month, there was $483,000 of tax revenue compared to year to date. $51 million. So most of it is collected, and so that's reducing how much our revenue is each month, but our expenses remain pretty steady, right? So now we're going to go negative, where we made up a lot, where we really built up at the beginning of the year. So tax revenue, we've collected 98% of that year to date. EMS net revenue is 54.1% compared to where you might expect to be 7 months through the year at 58%. So a little bit less than expected. We're off about 1.5 trips per day. And so that's the majority of that explanation is the fact that trips are less than expected. Everything else is pretty close to what is budgeted. There are some timing differences in our operating expenses and in our capital, where things are just haven't been planned yet, in terms of they'll happen in the second half of the year. A few things at first are probably delayed, but primarily it's just the fact that we haven't gotten there yet. Anyway, revenue is less than expenses at this point, or more than expenses, $18,468,000 compared to a budgeted total of $15,127,000. So we'll see those numbers converge as we go through the remainder of the year. Happy to try to answer any questions.
So when it comes to tax revenue, we have about, of what we're expecting, about $1 million to go, about $1,040,000.
Yes.
And we got about 5 months to collect it.
That's correct. So through...
I feel like we're on track to get that.
So I was... You asked me that question last month, and I said yes. And it's we're going to be very close. It may be a little under, a little over, but within a small sine curve. When I looked at last year, we were in pretty good shape as well, came up just a little bit short. We're going to be very close, but at this point, it looks very good. We're, as you said, $1,041,000 to go at the end of April. At the end of, based on today, up to date, that's $821,000. So we've already kind of made up a chunk there. So $821,000 from today till the end of the year. So we seem to be progressing well.
Okay. Good. Any other questions, Ms. Allen? All righty. As we're moving on here, I'm trying to find my spot. Number 13, Mr. Walker.
I'd like to consider an act on billing policies.
And a second. Mr. Allen, do you have a question?
Yes, so this is a new policy. We obviously have procedures that help us get through our billing on a day-to-day basis, but we'd really needed an overarching policy. And so it's just a very general that we will comply with federal and state regulations for ambulance billing. Everything that we do goes towards achieving that.
It's a brand new policy. Right?
It is.
It's been a practice.
Right.
Yes.
So you're basically
noted. Thank you.
You're putting the practices. You're
but yes.
Paper, so.
Yes, sir.
All right. We have a first, motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Passes. Number 14, Mr. Walker.
Consider an act on changes to the signers for the following Wood Forest National Bank accounts, which would be the MCHD operating account, the MCHD tax revenue account, as well as the investment account, as well as the public health operating and investment accounts.
Second.
I don't know if you're asking for a second or if you're actually saying
take it either way. All right. I guess this is self-explanatory. We have any comments?
Since Mr. Grice is no longer on the board, removing him, Mr. Walker was named treasurer. So basically that's just a one-for-one replacement there. In having discussion with Ms. Inman, she is out of town a lot. She's not available a lot, and she just didn't feel like it was fair to the district to be a signer on the account. I spoke to Ms. Peacock, and she agreed to be a signer on the account, and so that's the reason for that change.
Very good. Any other comments, questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All righty. Number 15, Mr. Walker.
Generally the same thing, consider an act on changes to the signers for the text pool and TechStar accounts.
Seconds. Basically the same thing. Any questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All righty. Number 16, Mr. Walker.
Consider an act to ratify the payment of the Impact Fleet monthly invoice for fuel charges for the month of April. The Impact Fleet invoice in the amount of $115,367.30.
Mr. Bagley seconds. Any questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? It passes.
May I make a point?
Oh, yeah,
and I think this may have already been made, but I just wanted to double say it.
Every month you'll notice that you guys are having to approve options.
They talk into
it. Every month you guys have to approve the fleet money that we spend, or you're ratifying it actually, because it's well in excess of $50,000, I think, which is my limit. So that's the reason why it's coming to ratification every single month for you guys.
Right.
How does this compare to previous months?
So we are seeing an increase. In this month, year to date, it's at 51%. And so we are eating up our budget. When I did a projection a couple weeks ago, we're going, provided gas doesn't go up a lot more than from where it is now, we're going to be right at budget. But it all depends on pricing at this point. We had a pretty generous budget, but I don't think any of us foresaw $4 plus gas.
Well, we don't know when it's going to get better.
Correct.
It may not go up, but it may keep
diesel.
Yeah, I did say gas, diesel primarily.
All right, number 17, Mr. Walker.
Consider an act on payment of district invoices. Total invoice is $2,825,270.66.
Do we have a second? Mr. Bagley seconds. Any questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. Number 18, Mr. Walker again.
On salvage and surplus. So we have, there it is, you have any discussion?
Do you have a second?
Second.
Mr. Bagley seconds. Any questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. Number 19. Jackie. Second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And we're done. Real quickly with that, we're going to convene into executive session as authorized by the Texas Open Meetings Act to deliberate in closed session on the following matters as authorized under the Texas Open Meetings Act. Number one, in regards to Section 551.072 of the Texas Government Code for deliberations about real estate property under 551.71, to receive legal advice both regarding property on 200 South Kennedy, Willis, Texas, and other comparable properties. Now, and two, in regards to Section 551.074 of the Texas Government Code to deliberate the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties of a public officer, employee, Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Randy Johnson. And with that, we will stand at 4:34.
At
4:54. 4:54, I apologize. I need to warm up.